The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Secret Service director resigns after the Trump assassination attempt. I don't know if you've heard that news, but I wanted to make sure you knew that. And no doubt, since she has carried water for the Democratic administration, there'll be a Bitcoin or two, maybe a few more Bitcoins in a secret account someplace just to make sure. Hey, thank you for taking the bullets for us, and sorry it didn't work out the way we would have wanted. You see, that's my really cynical approach to the whole thing, all right? Now let's go to Cliff. Hey, Cliff, how you doing this morning on the cat tax? And you know about this personally. Fire away.
Hi, Bill. CPT-001 zone.
Oh, that's right. Those ridiculous fire zones that we're all supposed to memorize. Okay, I'm glad to know this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm somewhat in disagreement with Herman there, because there's at least three businesses that I do business with, an appliance store and a couple of automotive dealerships, and on their sales receipt, when you pay for your bill, there's a line item for that cat tax, and the automotive dealership doesn't specifically say cat tax. I can't remember what's on there, but it.
Well, they should put that on the receipt. They should actually line item it out there so people know for sure on absolutely everything they buy. And if I were a store, maybe we should start doing that, just on everything. By how much of this bill is going to the state of Oregon just because? That's all.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And it should be, I think it should be mandated as a line item so more people are aware of this.
And then they'll say, hey, wait a minute. Why am I paying an extra 1% on this car? Or on this house, or I don't know if it's on the housing or not, but well, on the construction materials, right? It would all be there, sure.
Well, if anybody that has a gross receipt of $1 million or more, which that encompasses a lot of businesses here in Oregon.
It doesn't take long even for a local restaurant to hit $1 million in sales. That's not making $1 million, right? That's not making $1 million. That just means it passed through. Now, how much of that was profit? Maybe 40 or 50,000. Or maybe a little bit more than that, but let's be honest about this thing. We all pay that. Thanks, Cliff. Let me go to next line. Hi, you're on the Bill Myers Show. Good morning. Who's this?
Hi,
who's this?
This is Sylvia.
Sylvia.
I'm just calling to say that years ago, I had my pressure cooker checked, the pressure, you know, by going to Ace Hardware. Now, we don't have that Ace Hardware here, but also at Rowley's, they do the pressure check on your safety, you know, your fire extinguisher.
Uh-huh.
So why wouldn't they do it on a pressure cooker?
So are you trying to tell me, Sylvia, that there are actually people out there that don't take a government paycheck who are able to inspect pressure cookers, right?
Well,
are you sure?
They did mine years ago.
That's a conspiracy theory. Only a government-funded extension service employee can possibly safely check. I'm kidding, you know. I'm just having fun with you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I just think she needs to know that. There are places. Try Rowley's, and if they don't know, then maybe even your a hardware store, like in Medford, Ace Hardware.
Maybe a Daisy's, the Ace, or a Blackbird, or someone else there. All right, I'll tell you what. If anybody else is inspecting these, please let me know. The email bill at BillMyersShow.com. Thank you, Sylvia. Okay?
Bye.
All right. Bye now.
It's heating.
K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
12 minutes after 8, 770-5633. Standing by, I'm hoping to talk with AI guy Phil Siegel. I want to talk about the risks associated with artificial intelligence. There was even a deep fake of Biden over the weekend on PBS News that was going viral, announcing his withdrawal, but he was just cussing up a storm in the process of doing it. And people thought it was real, of course. So what do we believe, right? We'll see if he checks in. If not, I'll have to ban him from the show till tomorrow, okay? Or till we reschedule him. Things like that happen. I want to do some emails of the day, too. Emails of the day, and it's sponsored by our friends, Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way. It's right next door to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. And what they're famed for, really, they have a brand new lab. A few months ago, they ended up getting this. It's an in-house lab, And so you know how it used to be where you'd go get a crown, and they take care of your tooth. They get the little ladder thing put on it. I forget exactly the technology of it. And then and they say, all right, come back in about 6 weeks after the out-of-town lab has it ready. Well, a lot of times they can just craft it for you as you wait so they can get your tooth ready, and then they put it on, and off you go. And that's CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, all right? Actually, we're going to do the emails of the day a little bit later because I did see the line, the guest line rang here, and I believe this is Phil Siegel. How you doing, Phil? Welcome.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I wanted to talk about that deep fake situation, and you are with a nonprofit called CAPTRS. I'm not familiar with this. Could you tell us more about this nonprofit and where we can find out more?
Yeah, sure. You could go to www.captrs.org.
Mm-hmm.
We are a nonprofit that's at the intersection of gaming and artificial intelligence, and our mission is to build simulations to help society better prepare for disasters and kind of one-time events. So, really born out of the preparedness for the next pandemic, but also looking at things like blackouts, cyber attacks, infrastructure attacks, and so forth.
Oh, so you're actually trying to help people. Wonderful. Okay. Because it seems like so much of artificial intelligence right now is either, well, I guess there are some people that are able to make, some things that are relatively useful, but how many ways can we fake the people out online? I mean, would it be wrong for me to kind of wonder about that, especially with that Biden deepfake that was making the rounds the other day?
Yeah, the interesting thing about that one and what we're going to struggle with, especially when it comes to either online or election-oriented AI for fakes or whatever you want to call them, is that there is First Amendment rights to things like satire, to exaggeration, and so forth. But there isn't First Amendment rights to influence people with things that are clearly misleading, but that are not satire. That one, it kind of strides the line, because if I were, if I were going to defend them, I would say, of course, everybody knows the president's been, missing in action. He had COVID. This is clearly a joke, and it's funny and so forth. And even some of the comments you can see online, if people read them all, they would know that that was a fake. On the other hand,
people were sharing it as if it were real, though, right?
They were, and there's always going to be some people that are fooled by that and so forth. It's just the issue, and this was long before AI. I don't know if you recall back to the picture of President Trump hugging Anthony Fauci that the DeSantis campaign ran. The DeSantis campaign simply said, we were just trying to illustrate a point. We didn't say that actually happened. We were saying that Donald Trump is linked and embraced Anthony Fauci, and that was the point we were trying to make. And so it would be very difficult unless, and this is the unless, the Federal Election Commission and the state election commissions have got to come up with guidelines that have real teeth, real civil or criminal penalties for, breaking whatever rules that they have. Those then need to be tested at the Supreme Court to see which ones violate First Amendment rights and which ones don't. And then we'll have something in place. The problem is right now it's the Wild West. We really haven't put anything in place.
Yeah. My only concern is when, we're going to criminalize misinformation, right? And a lot of times, though, what has been called misinformation is a difference of opinion. And we don't want to go that direction, right, Phil?
That is correct. And, we have all kinds of interesting things there, which is, we really are not set up and our temperament isn't set up to have, if you recall, the administration wanted to have this thing called a disinformation governance board. That was a terrible idea, just terrible, because who gets to be on this board? How do they decide what's misinformation and not? 2 years ago, you could be canceled and probably not put on trial, but for saying that COVID came from a lab. Now, it's a 50-50 theory, right? It's not misinformation. And then you have these things that we call malinformation, which I think is very problematic, which is things that are true but might have some negative consequences. Well, in the world that we come from, we call that the truth. And, you know, we cannot be regulating that.
Phil Siegel is the founder of the AI nonprofit, and I just want to make sure you know what it actually stands for, CAPTRS, the Center for Advanced Preparedness and Threat Response Simulation. How does that work? How does AI... What's that now? I know.
It's a mouthful.
I think your business card is a 3x5 card, right? Just a bit. But in all seriousness, Phil, captors... How do you use artificial intelligence for good to actually work preparedness scenarios? Because we're big on preparedness, people being prepared for whatever life may throw at us, and it's probably impossible to be prepared for everything, but almost any of us could be a little better prepared. How do you work this?
Yeah, so it's mainly meant for professionals that do preparedness for a living, so emergency management personnel, mm-hmm. Public health officials, and so forth. And I'll describe what we do. We build war games, essentially.
Oh.
Like the military builds war games to simulate potential military threats and wars and so forth and battles. We build war games for disasters. So we built games for the CDC, for the WHO. We're about to do our first one for national emergency managers to essentially simulate a blackout in their city. How would they respond? What would they do with resources? And the basic idea isn't to try to prepare them for everything. It's to get them to practice, just like a pilot has to get in the flight simulator every year to make sure that their skills are sharpened. We want to make sure that emergency personnel are getting in the equivalent of their flight simulator and practicing all the time, not just looking at PowerPoints, not just reading about disasters, but actually putting them and immersing them in disasters. And then the artificial intelligence is just like in games where we have non-player characters, we have the ability to have these kind of non-playing AI characters, or to have artificial intelligence adjust the parameters of the game so that people are given more and more difficult problems to solve.
Okay. Now, Phil, was your organization involved with that? You know, there was kind of a CDC war game that came out shortly before the pandemic of 2020. Remember that? And they were kind of concerned. People were kind of concerned, like, oh, this seems like, they're concerned about this coming, and then magically it happens just a couple months later. I forget what that was called, what the name of that simulation
was. Yeah, I forget also, but yes, I know what you're talking about. No, we were not involved with that. That was built by a university. But that was not exactly a war game. Let me describe what that was. There are exercises that are built to illustrate points. And that game was built to illustrate the point, which turned out to be true, that weren't spending enough money on preparedness. But those types of exercises can only go one way. No matter what decision you make, the game moves in a very specific direction. Our games are like games you might play, where you're given a lot of choices and you can make choices, and the choices you make might affect the next choice.
Okay. All right, so you create these war games of emergencies and threats that could be response. Like you say, well, even our emergency managers in Jackson and or Josephine County. So what, they would be sitting down with games that you have worked with then and see how they would react to it? Like we've had massive wildfire or a massive arson fire that ran through Oregon, Southern Oregon, 4 years ago. And it killed a handful of people, but destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. Is that something then that you could fashion with artificial intelligence and the emergency managers play it and kind of see how they would react to it? Is that sort of the purpose of this all?
Exactly. We might build a wildfire war game that's not like the one that already happened. It might be caused by a different source. It might spread in a different way. It might cross jurisdictional boundaries. We can build and have built lots of different games, but the idea is to get this group of people to practice on things they haven't encountered before. So, yeah, we built a number of games for public health officials. Everybody wants us to build the COVID game, and we say, why would we do that? You already played that one and lost.
Yeah, you lived it. Yeah, you lived it. All right.
Let's build a different one.
Hit the reset button for crying out loud, right? Okay.
Right.
All right. So, Phil, so is this mostly first responders that you're doing this work for, so it's not for the public generally? Or am I wrong about that?
Generally that's true, though we have a game on our website that the general public can play and be a first responder, if you will, that was written by a professor in France, and we translated it and put it on a different platform so that people can play it online and see how they do. We also are going to build games for the public. We are looking, it's harder to find sponsors for that because most of the sponsors want us to build games for the first responders. But we are definitely planning on doing more things that allow the public to also prepare for emergencies. And it's the interesting thing is you find out things you never would have guessed that we've learned during several emergencies. One of the problems, for example, in a lot of natural disasters is that people don't want to leave their pets. And so people do very dangerous things in order to make sure that their pets are safe. How do we make sure that we put in place certain things so that we don't have people risking their lives because of their pets? Not that we want their pets to perish, but what can we do to help them make sure that they're ready to help their pets when an emergency comes?
I'm intrigued with your nonprofit. I really am. It's a Center for Advanced Preparedness and the Response Simulation. It's CAPTRS.org. Back to the deep fake issue where the fake Biden video was going out last weekend, and it caught fire, online. And a lot of people were repeating it and sharing it uncritically. And this is nothing unusual. A lot of this stuff has been going on. Is there any way to watermark artificial intelligence so that we always know that we're dealing with artificial intelligence, or is that something which is not even part of the artificial intelligence model?
No, it is, and we can do that. The issue is, unless there's penalties, so if you say to people you have to put a watermark on an artificially generated video or whatever, even audio, and audio is much more difficult because it's harder to identify. You're going to have campaigns do that, or they're going to look at it and say the penalties are so small, I'm willing to pay the penalty, which is another issue entirely. But individuals, are we really going to have an army of enforcers going around and fining citizens or putting them in jail for doing a deep fake? It would take a lot of resources, and so we have to figure out what we're willing to tolerate and not tolerate. I think we need to start with the campaigns first, and just make sure that they're behaving in a way that is agreed upon parameters or law or whatever it is. But we really have not even done the agreed upon parameters yet, much less put legal teeth behind this.
Yeah, and right now we're in the early days, really, of more widespread use of artificial intelligence, and it's just going to get better over time. At this point, if someone plays me some AI created music, I can hear it. You know what I mean? But there will probably be a day in which no, I won't be able to. And that gets a little concerning, because what do we believe? What is real? What is fake? You ever wonder about that?
At that point. Yeah, we're at that point now. And I'm sure there's lots of people thinking about, what can they do? We've had artists where people have released songs that would be considered a hit that the artist did not do. Using that artist's voice. And the question is, so what do you do about that? If the person's not collecting any money, it's not clear that that's illegal. If the person is collecting money, then, there's well-worn law around that. But are we going to have, Drake suing, a housewife created a interesting deep fake of him singing a song. Yeah, we might, but you know, we're going to have a lot of kind of minor court cases in that situation.
Yeah. Phil, do you think there could be a day in which, if you create something, you will brand it as BI, biological intelligence? Could you see that happening instead of trying to brand the artificial intelligence, branding BI, biological intelligence? In other words, yes, I really made this or created this or this song or this show or this video or this picture or this piece of art, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, and we already also have that in some ways. And it's kind of an interesting kind of dilemma because right now we do have some actors that are thinking about that, you know, appearing in movies as their old, younger, beautiful or handsome self, and, you know, almost capable of playing a role in a real movie as their non-biological self. But then what does that mean for opportunities for new actors and actresses?
Right.
And, you know, how do we think about that? And how do you pay them for allowing that? You know, it's rife with a lot of problems. But if you're Tom Cruise and you want to act at least for another generation, while people know who you are, you know, we can't really stop him from doing that.
Because you got to figure right now he's at the age where how many times is he going to jump off the building for real? Because he's been doing his own stunts for a long, long time, right? For real.
Not very many more times.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Boy, Phil, what a great talk here. I think we may have a call, people interested, and hopefully they'd like to ask you a question. But hi, you're on with get this up. Phil Siegel is the founder of CAPTRS. Who's this?
Bill, is David.
Hey, David, you have a question for Phil? Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him, does his group get any government money? Do you get Homeland Security money for developing your group?
That's a really good question, Phil. Thanks for, or David, rather. Thanks for making it.
Well, the reason I ask is whether or not he's doing deep fakes himself.
All right. Thanks for the call here. Thank you, David. What do you say, Phil?
Yeah, so let me answer the second question. We're not doing deep fakes. Most of our games are decision-making games where you don't actually see people's faces or bodies. It's you're given a bunch of information to process, and then you make decisions. So you're not immersed in an actual universe or a metaverse or whatever you want to call it. It's much more of a you know, you're sitting around a table like a general would for a war game. On the first question, we have been parts of groups that have applied for and gotten government grants, both in the public health and in emergency management situation. Soon we'll be going out looking for, you know, fundraising and looking for donations. To this point, we've been mostly privately funded and some government grants.
All right. Very good. Phil, I appreciate you taking the time talking a little bit more about it. It's a fascinating site. In fact, there's a game portfolio that you have there. Is that where the game that the public can play is located, out of curiosity?
Yes. The game is up in the, I think it's in the right corner of that page. It's called COVID-25. It was developed by a French scientist. And we put it into English, and people can go on and play. And I believe we're keeping track of scores, so you can see how you do. But it's, you know, it's this, you would make decisions and see whether or not you're able to stop the disease that's programmed into that game.
Final question I would have for you, Phil: is there any possibility that AI creation of threat games might actually give people ideas on creating threats? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I worry not so much about the games doing that, but in general. And so one of the things that we've done is we've run a bunch of writing contests for people to build a database of threats that we now have. And we're using AI to generate threats, because what we want to do is make sure that we're characterizing and looking at a number of different threats so that we're, you know, we're ready for a very wide range. But, you know, make no mistake, there are people that are using AI. I'll just give you an example. You know, think about the old movies where the cat burglars are looking at the blueprint of the building to figure out how they're going to shimmy through the pipe and
right.
so on and so forth. You know, if I were a cat burglar today, I would be programming in the blueprints of a number of buildings that I knew had good things and asking the AI what the smartest building to go after and what the, you know, the biggest prize might look like. And so those are the types of things AI is going to be able to do. And we have to be ready and understand that bad guys are going to use this technology just like good guys.
Very good. And the good guys need to be using it, too, for that reason. Center for Advanced Preparedness exactly. and Threat Response Simulation, CAPTRS.org. I'm going to put all your information up. It's fascinating. Great talk, Phil. And I hope to have you back on. This is more than just a little interesting, okay? You be well. Thank you.
All right. I'd love to be back. Thank
all right.
you much.
8:34, and you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. American Rancher Garage, United in
Service.com. Welcome back to the Bill Meyer Show, 106.3 KMED.
So we use the bumper, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We go to Crazy Jean. We're not so crazy, Jean. How you doing, Jean? Welcome.
Oh, it's a wonderful day. But maybe not so wonderful when it looks like we're building things that are going to replace us. We are committing suicide.
Huh. You know, there's a part of me that wonders if at some point the world will be, there's going to be a portion of the world that's going to be the Matrix and plugged into the entire AI world, and we'll just be sitting in our little easy chair with the tubes plugged into us, you know? And then the other half, the rebels will be the biological intelligence. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be the bad guys, and no doubt we're going to go around try to find ways of crushing the artificial intelligence, and yes, it will come after us, because why do they need us anyway?
Yeah, it'll be like there was that one stormtrooper in the first Star Wars movie. Rebel scum. Rebel scum biological intelligence. Okay, anyway, thanks for the call. Appreciate that, Gene. Let me go to James and Selma. James on the fire map. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I think we need a class action lawsuit against Jeff Goldblum and sue him because we need to, as a contractor, they always says you can write a contract and vice versa. And I think that's what we need to do is turn it back on them. They are our neighbors. They need to clean up their forest, harvest it, clean it up, make fire breaks for our protection, and we have standing because we have higher insurance fees and fines, and we need to turn it back on them to clean up their act with their forest.
Well, Jeff Golden's forest, though. Jeff Golden doesn't have a forest. What Jeff Golden is essentially making it easy to burn through your property is not wanting to go after the federal forest, really. You know, federal land management.
He's the guy that wanted to kill us by saying that no medical treatment unless we were vaccinated. I think he needs to be held responsible.
I don't remember Jeff being that way. I could be wrong. But if you can find someone willing to take that case, and if you could pierce the personal immunity, I don't know, that could be a high lift.
Standing, well, you have higher fees on your insurance.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would. What about all the legislators that voted for Senate Bill 762? Jeff didn't do it by himself.
Well, I think they all need to be in on it too, because it shouldn't be on us. They're our neighbors. If my neighbor has a hazard, he's responsible if he endangers my property. And I'm saying the BLM and those people need to be responsible. We need to start harvesting the forest for our protection.
Good luck for that. All right. Thank you, James. It's 8:39. Now then, after that, all this big, heavy talk, artificial intelligence and 4-H and pig pen restorations and people running for attorney general. Let's have some fun. Just give you a great $20 gift certificate at Diner 62. Diner 62, for all your hearty breakfast favorites, omelets, skillets, waffles, biscuits and gravy, chicken fried steak. It all lives there just south of White City. And Diner 62 has some of the best salads in the Valley, too. Great taco salad. They brought that over for me a few weeks ago. And, oh, man, Friday when they deliver me a breakfast, when Diner 62 does it, they ended up delivering me a crispy chicken sandwich that is to die for with the fries. And get it with sweet tatey fries, I think, is even better, okay? That's also available. 770-5633. All I ask is that you have not played and won this in the last, or and won it, rather, in the last 60 days. Give somebody else a chance to enjoy Diner 62. We'll have that question next.
OregonEDeal.com. 1063 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
The Diner 62 Real American Quiz. And Joel is first up this morning. Hey, Joel, how you doing?
Oh, all right. We're just enjoying the weather.
By the way, you need to live here because when you're down by the gas station, I can actually understand you. When you call up at home, man, your cell phone is just dog food. Okay, just gonna tell you.
Yeah, well, tell me. Four cell phones. I'm lucky to get one.
All right. Well, anyway,
I think they got a scrambler in a tree somewhere.
I think so. Well, it was July 22nd, yesterday in history, Joel, 1862. Lincoln tells his candidate about the Emancipation Proclamation, that he'll issue a proclamation to free the slaves, but then he would have to wait until they have a substantial military victory to make the announcement. Now, the issue of the Emancipation Proclamation had less to do with ending slavery than saving the crumbling Union. In an August 1862 letter to Tribune editor Horace Greeley, Lincoln confessed, "My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union, and it's not to either save or destroy slavery." I guess they were hoping that emancipating the slaves in these areas that were invaded or would stimulate a rush of the slaves into the ranks of the Union Army. It's what they were hoping to do ultimately. So the question here, Joel, how long did it take after notifying his cabinet before he made the proclamation public? 2 weeks? 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or a dozen weeks before Lincoln announced it to everybody?
I'll go for the second one.
Second one, 4 weeks. Is it 4 weeks? Not this time, Joel. Okay, we'll talk to you
next time.
Let me go to Tom. Hello, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tom, it's 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or 12 weeks. How many weeks before Abe ended up announcing the Emancipation Proclamation to everyone?
2 weeks.
You're thinking 2 weeks. No, it was longer than 2 weeks. We then go on to it'd be John. Hello, John.
Hi.
6 weeks, 8 weeks, or 12 weeks? How long before Abe told us about the Emancipation Proclamation?
Is it 6 weeks?
Is it 6 weeks? No, it's more than 6 weeks, which means we have Carol. Hello, Carol.
Good morning.
You're a 50-50 deal, okay? You might get this. So did Abe wait 8 weeks or 12 weeks before he announced the Emancipation Proclamation?
12 weeks.
12 weeks. Oh, it's too long, man. I was hoping for you. All right, let me go to the next line. Hi, who's this? Go ahead. Hello? Hello, you're on. One T, going once, going twice.
Okay.
Who's this?
This is Peggy.
Oh, hey, Peggy. Is it 8 weeks or 8 weeks?
Gee, I think it's weeks.
Yeah.
You're a winner!
You're a winner only because you were the last person standing, Peggy. I hope you don't feel embarrassed about that.
All right? I'm not standing. I'm still in bed.
Okay, good for you. Hang on here. Answer is D. As promised, Lincoln waited to unveil the proclamation when he could do it on the heels of a successful Union military advance. And it was just after a victory at Antietam that he announced this, okay? 847 at KMED and KBXG. Hang on, Peggy. We'll get your address and send it out.
Artisan Bakes.
Visit us at siskiyoupump.com.
Hi, I'm Jolene from Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros, and I'm on KMED.
I appreciate you waking up here. A lot of information, fire hose of news and opinion. That is for sure. 10 before 9. And joining me is Grants Pass City Councilor, also State Rep Dwayne Younger. Dwayne, welcome back to the show. And meeting last night, coming up with some sort of strategy to, well, deal with the homeless and where they're going to go. Fair enough. What happened?
Well, there was
you know, we had a meeting here, I think it was 2 weeks ago, not a meeting, but a listen, learn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when that came out, I was really upset that I didn't like what was happening. I was in Wisconsin at a conference, but I watched the whole thing, and I just, you know, I reached out to a couple other counselors, and I'm going to go ahead and give them credit because they've worked with me for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, trying to come up with the best, you know, what we thought was objectively reasonable for the people of the residents of Grants Pass. And, you know, that was Counselor Delagrange and Counselor Pell. And we said, you know, I was like, they only need four places to rest. And, you know, last night they had this whole list, you know, that the city manager brought up. And I told him before the meeting, I go, I don't like your list. It's ridiculous. I go, the residents of this city, they want their parks back. And after it was the, you know, it was time to discuss, I just said, hey, these are the parks. These are the areas we want. You know, one's by the Hillcrest Fire Station. One's by the police station, the water treatment facility, the Parkside Fire Station, and a little teeny sliver of Riverside West. There's a little teeny sliver. It's actually a separate tax lot. And, you know, we also agreed, that, you know, before we even came to this meeting, that we also wanted to incentivize people that were really trying to get out of homelessness. So we made the water treatment plant more of a little bit longer place.
Mm-hmm. So a lot, you could stay there longer, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. You know, we can't give it to them, but you could stay up to a week, basically, before you'll be told you have to move. And it's probably going to be a little bit longer than that. You know, law enforcement has discretion on things. They can do, you know, do things. And we're trying to give, you know, there is elderly or people that are disabled or something. And I don't think none of us are that cold-hearted that we don't want them to get help.
I'm glad to hear this, though. There are different classes of homeless. There's the homeless that are the derelict, drunk, and addicted, and totally disordered types, right? And then there are other people who are down on their luck, I guess. Would that be a fair assessment, kind of the difference, kind of breaking it?
I think there's a fair assessment. I think there is different classes of homelessness, and, you know, we don't want to enable the ones that don't want to change, but we want to help the ones that want
do
help.
That need help, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, I think that is the law, you know, we got this House Bill 3115, and it's actually House Bill 3124 with the 72-hour thing, in which, you know, really makes it difficult. But I think most people are reasonable. They're not so cold-hearted. They understand that there's homeless people that want help and need help, and there's other people out there that are homeless, they're trying to take advantage of the residents, stealing, doing drugs, whatever else they're doing, and they need to be dealt with. And I think it, you know, we got a good response from the residents. There was quite a few residents there last night. We will have to vote on it because, you know, by law, you have to have a public comment time. So we'll have to go back for the next meeting where there's a public comment can actually, you know, see it. But we all voted unanimous. I can't even speak. Sorry. They were all agreed, and sorry, it's been a long morning. I just got back from the fairgrounds, so
you were part of the Pigpen Gate restoration, right?
Yeah, my mini hats. We were, you know, my staff, Mary Beth, works for me. She's my chief of staff up in Salem, and she's been talking to OSU yesterday, and we're switching hats now and helping to get this resolved. You know, the county, you know, Commissioner John West is on the phone with them, and we knew this was going to get resolved real fast because they promised me it would be. Chris Elliott, he drove all the way down this morning from Corvallis to make sure this happened, and he was, you know, he apologized for these 4-H Association people that did this. They never got permission from the OSU to do this. They always wanted the fair to happen, and these pins will eventually become property of the fairgrounds. Chris is at the fairgrounds right now.
And that makes sense, given that the community donated the money for this. 4-H didn't donate the money to this, okay?
Correct.
It was just a conduit for the donations. That's all it was. All right.
Yeah. Hmm. And so, you know, this was done right. The pins came a little bit later than they were supposed to this morning, but there's people, volunteers, they're setting them up down there. The fair's going to go as, you know, as it should be. all the kids will be able to participate. And if there's kids in 4-H that are not part of the ag, you know what? I've talked to all those leaders down there. They can participate just like all the ag kids. This is for the children, and they want this to happen, you know. And we have a lot of great people in this community. They're doing great things, and I'm glad this got resolved. You know, I hate to say shame on the people that thought this was a good idea to take these pins. You know, I don't know how they thought that was a great idea.
Well, this was some retaliation. That was some. Yeah. And by the way, you know what? I was talking with somebody about this last night, and there was a. Is there any possibility you think that? And like Herman and I were talking about, people are so corrupted that government has to be doing so many things. Do you think the people will beg to have OSU back at some point?
You know, I don't know about that. There's a lot of other, you know, I'm hearing there's other counties that are, you know, that are in the same boat that us. You know, I don't mm-hmm. know. It seems to be a money thing. I think there is some good people that do work for OSU. But, you know, there's higher, and when you're starting to push this DEI and all this other stuff, I don't really think that every person that works for OSU Extension is really happy about that. They do have a job, and they probably got into it because they like farming or whatever.
Yeah, but I still think all the counties, including Jackson County, should be questioning these affiliations right now. I really do, because there seem to be an awful lot of politicized strings that are attached under the guise of, hey, have your kid join 4-H, you know, that sort of thing. But that's just me.
I would agree. The only way to send a message to the state is to defund these areas. You know, I was on a call last week with OSAA about, you know, boys playing girls sports. You know, and they're being, you know, they're feeling the pressure from Oregon Department of Education. You know, and if you look at the stats, Oregon Department of Education isn't doing too well. We're 45th. You know, we need to start standing up to these people and saying, we're not going to pay.
Yeah.
You get your act together.
Yeah. There's nothing like going out there and talking about Oregon public schools and saying, we're 45. We're 45. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I really appreciate Dwayne, Councilor Dwayne Younker, and, of course, State Rep Dwayne Younker. And thanks for the update here on the homelessness conversation here. So when is there going to be a vote? When do you think the people in Grants Pass will be able to comment on moving the homeless to, you know, a few places rather than all the parks as it is right now?
It should be. I would assume it's going to be at the next meeting, the next city council meeting. I don't think there's one next week. The one after that should be. Actually, the 7th. It's going to be next month. So,
okay.
Yeah, next month. Vote on it. You know, I know the councilors want to move this thing as fast as possible.
They got to get they got to get going. People have been real hot about that. All right, Councilor.
Yeah, and they deserve it. The residents of Grants Pass deserve to get their parks back.
Well, it's theirs. Hey. That's just it. Yeah. It's theirs. And the Supreme Court said, hey, yeah, it's okay. It's, you know, the way you're looking to do this. So I think it just makes common sense. All right, Dwayne, thanks so much, and we'll have you back, okay? Be well.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Bye.
All right.